Arvo's with Tim Shield
on Double J.
Tell me about Muhammad Ali. Okay, so like, what's your first memory maybe from childhood of Ali?
It was a VHS tape, if you remember them, that my dad showed me. And I think it was a documentary about the Nation of Islam and the sort of black Muslim movement over there in the 60s. And then there was a section about Muhammad Ali, and I think it was his friendship with Malcolm X.
Right.
But then it also just had some footage, and my dad had some extra tapes of him fighting and showed me that Muhammad Ali had fought in Malaysia. He even went to Borneo, where my family's from. Yeah. I don't think too many heavyweight champions of the world had ever done that. And he was just the coolest, most charismatic, funniest, sort of also fierce guy I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And at a time in my life when I was trying to find my selfhood as a young Muslim Australian dude, you know, there weren't people like, you know, there was no Waleed Ali on television back then, like, you know, and so this was my first kind of Muslim role model, I guess. Well, besides the Prophet Muhammad, of course.
So your dad has these Muhammad Ali VHS tapes lying around.
Yeah.
Do you think he was keeping them for a special day when he would sit you down and show you, like, hey, here is a role model for you?
I don't think so. Nah. I think it happened in a kind of haphazard way, and I had experienced some racism in the schoolyard, and I still don't know. I should ask him, but I kind of don't want to ruin it, but I almost feel as if just at that time when I felt like I could internalize that racism and negativity, my dad came out with this thing.
Yeah.
And it was showed me. And it was, you know, because there's only so much your parents can say to you. But then, I don't know, sometimes you need those external kind of circuit breakers. I see it as a circuit breaker.
Yeah.
You know, because you could get trapped in those cycles forever. And, you know, and lose that confidence and think less of yourself. And then every now and then, a figure like Ali sort of strides into your life and changes the way you think about it.
And he was so conscious, even though he had this kind of swagger and bravado, and it sort of sometimes felt like he didn't know what was going to come out of his mouth next.
Yeah.
He was very conscious the whole time of what kind of role model he was.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether, particularly, you know, later in life, he must have been so aware that for generations to come, people were going to be digging out VHS tapes. And
yeah, definitely. I think he was aware of how many people around the world kind of connected to him and his message. And apparently at the time, he was kind of the most accessible celebrity in the world. You know, he had that, I think it was Deer Farm, I think it was called, or I'm going to get that wrong. But, you know, people could just come, and especially kids could just walk in and just visit the heavyweight champion of the world and come and say hello. And he was open to that, you know. There was nothing of that celebrity distance about him, and I like that. He was human, and I think that's why everyone kind of connected to him. He was sweet.
Have you thought about setting up a similar thing? You could have kids come.
I don't think I'm as lovable as Muhammad Ali, sadly. But you know, if you want to come down to Queanbeyan to the Riverside Plaza, come and have a kebab with your boy Omar Musa.
Kebabs at the Riverside Plaza. I'm into that. So I want to talk about Ali's relationship with hip hop, because it's very much a lot of what you're exploring, or some of what you're exploring.
Right.
I think you even in that song you refer to him as a proto-rapper.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you kind of mean by that?
Well, I mean, he brought that kind of swag and braggadocio and playful element that every rapper pretty much ever since has just been trying to replicate.
Yeah.
And he would use it to promote his fights. I obviously have that short one, you know, Me We, that the shortest poem in the English language, but the, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, eyes can't hit what your hands can't see, or hands can't hit what your eyes can't see, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it's so visual and so fun and playful. But then also, you know, he had that kind of political element, so he combined it all.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget that he was pulling all that stuff together before hip-hop as a movement was kind of pulling all of that stuff together.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got some examples of some of his wordplay, actually. We should have a little listen.
Some people say, you better watch Joe Frazier. He's awful strong. I said, tell him to try band roll on.
After we get the bear, we will go after the hair.
Give me five. We'll give you 30, but your face is too dirty.
I'm a poet. I'm a prophet. I'm the resurrector. I'm the savior of the boxing world. If it wasn't for me, the game would be dead.
That's Ali. One of my other favorites. Well, actually, I wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite line?
I don't toss a wood alligator, throw lightning in jail. You know, and then we're here. I'm so mean. I don't hospitalize the brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Yes.
All that sort of stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah.
He was so far. You know, that beat where he's like, I'm so fast. I cut out the light and I was in bed before the light even went out. You know?
he loved words and he was very conscious of.
And he was dyslexic too. Do you know that?
No, yeah. I had no idea.
And so it would actually take him like, hours and hours, like these kind of seemingly simple rhymes. Norman Mailer asked him, how long did it take you to write that, champ? Like this couplet, he was like, it took me 5 hours. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this kind of brings us to your show, Since Ali Died, because you obviously also have a love of wordplay, whether or not you inherited that from Muhammad Ali. But I'm curious, like, so this is a one-man show. Mm. So this is you on stage for how long?
About an hour and 15 minutes.
And it's just you talking, basically, the whole way through. And I'm guessing that this isn't so much like freestyle. This is very conscious, deliberate, scripted performance.
Yeah, yeah, it's scripted. I mean, there are little bits where I divert every now and then and banter with the audience and stuff. But no, it's very structured around this kind of central metaphor of, well, it's an image, I guess. It's a vision. It's me in a boat with Muhammad Ali sailing down a dark river, and I'm telling him the story of my life and how it unfolded or maybe even fell apart after he died. And so, yeah, it is about the power of words and storytelling and poetry, and I really love that. Like, that was what drew me to spoken word, maybe even more than hip-hop, was that it was just you and a mic and your voice and your thoughts, and can you keep people interested? Mm. It seemed really sort of primal and ancient, and and I enjoyed doing that.
Oratory,
exactly. And that was one of the things, even returning back to the beginning of a conversation, like when I saw Malcolm X or Louis Farrakhan or Martin Luther King speaking for the first time, they were able to do that just with their voice and their cadence and their thoughts, and that was... That just seemed magical to me. Like, how do you get all these people from disparate backgrounds, disparate ages and walks of life, and you all, through some type of alchemy of words and rhythm, you bring them all onto the same page together? That was amazing to me.
And when you're on stage, are you kind of calling on that sense of poise and that, I don't know, deliberateness of some of those people like Malcolm X? And
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes... I'm definitely influenced by those preachers and orators and speakers. But, you know, the way I've tried to think about it is that you write in passion and edit in cold blood, you know, so that our words matter. They count. You can be sharp with them. Sometimes it's okay to be scattershot and sort of spray wildly, but at other times you can be like a sniper and hit them really precisely. And so and maybe it's like picking punches, you know, like Ali was able to do.
Do you reckon, like, did he like... You know, being on boats? Did he get seasickness?
I have no idea.
How would it be if you built this whole show around you and him in a boat only to find out that he actually had horrible seasickness?
Yeah, maybe I'm not doing this beautiful tribute to my hero. Maybe I'm like,
you're just torturing
his legacy. I have no idea. I know that he used to drive a pink Cadillac around, and I thought that was pretty cool. I should have, you know, now you got me thinking. It could have been me in a pink Cadillac sailing down the river, sort of like SpongeBob SquarePants with Muhammad Ali as my passenger. Who knows?
So in this show, you're sharing stories from your childhood and sharing that it was hard growing up, you know, brown-skinned in Queanbeyan. You know, do you think things have changed? And like, what do you hope maybe that people will get out of your show by sharing your story? What might change?
I mean, firstly, I don't want to overplay it. You know, it was definitely a lot harder for other people. I grew up in very, very privileged in a lot of ways, you know, like, you know, fairly middle class from an artistic family. I mean, all of these things, despite how demonized Muslim Australians often are, I mean, it pales in comparison to what, say, my Aboriginal friends growing up had to deal with. You know what I mean? So I want to make sure I put that out there. But, you know, what I'm trying to get across is some of the complexities of those stories and those intersections between class, religion, race, gender. You know, we are so keen to often see things in black and white and put up walls between each other, like quite literally, you know, if you think of like Donald Trump or something, but like, you know, through the arts, we can kind of build bridges and help each other understand the world, understand each other, and understand ourselves. And that's no small thing, you know, that's no small thing. And if I can help elucidate some of that experience to someone else, or reflect that experience in other kids who might have gone through the same thing, then that hopefully helps people feel less alone. And that is a really beautiful, magical thing, hopefully.
Music makes you.
The journey that they take you on is so transformative. You're totally awakening, you know, experiencing the physicality of live music, how you feel it, you see it happening, and then you're involved.
Double J.